Hey, Fedheads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 74, Spotlight on Southern Draw Cigars. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon. We're broadcasting the Armed Forces Radio Network, heard around the world, and of course, live on CigarFederation.com, picked up on YouTube. And if you're one of the lucky members out there listening on podcast, thanks very much for tuning in. Submit any information, any questions you want to the show, surgeon at CigarFederation.com or Rob at CigarFederation.com. And as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. Rob, what's going on, brother?
Oh, you know, just melting out here in California. Just it's a little warm today.
Is it a dry heat?
It is a dry heat. It's a dry heat. You're right.
it's like that Vegas heat.
Yeah, it's pushing 98 out here today. We get a couple of weeks like this every year, though. Because, I mean, I am in the San Francisco Bay Area, and if San Francisco gets up to about 90, like for one day a year, and everybody just, nobody goes to work, the city shuts down, people freak out. But I'm a little bit more inland, so we get some of the heat. And, you know, it's not too bad. Other than that, man, things are good. I've got three pretty solid beers on deck that I'm excited about, and maybe a fourth if I need it. And we're smoking a really good cigar that I know you're going to talk more about, but this is my first time smoking it. And so far, the first, quarter inch or so is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's amazing. But more about that in a minute. Of course, we're going to introduce our guest here. Very glad he could join us for the show. Robert Holt from Southern Draw Cigars. Robert, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hey, John. Rob, it's good to be back. It's been quite a spell since I got to visit with you guys, and it's going to be great fun. I mean, between us, we got 9 beers, I think, and it's hot here, but hotter where Rob's at, and looks like you got the best of the weather, but we're going to enjoy it. I appreciate the invite.
Well, I think one of the nice things about having so many beers floating around is even if we have an off show, it's still going to be a lot of fun.
One of them's bound to be right.
So, of course, talking a little bit about what we're smoking here, the Quick Draw Connecticut Short Panatella. I reviewed this cigar last week, and I kind of was mentioning to Robert before the show, I tend not to be a daily Connecticut smoker. Connecticuts for me are kind of few and far between. I tend to be in the medium plus. So I say that sort of as a caveat, because I rated this cigar a 94, which... For Cigar Federation, anything in the 90s has to be a pretty darn good cigar. And 94, of course, for us is a box split. Robert, do you want to take a moment and just talk a little bit about this cigar before we get into our pairings here?
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate taking a few minutes here. First of all, it's probably good to remind those folks that have had some Southern Draw and maybe not had the full line that the Quick Draw is actually a line. And the line is... currently has the Pennsylvania Broadleaf and the Dark Habano. This is the third blend in that line. It's really a line that we want to expand on that's connoisseur size, smaller ring gauge. The original Vitola for this line was the Petit Coron 4.5-44. This is a new Vitola, the Short Panatella, the 5.5-40. We'll be extending this, the Pennsylvania Broadleaf and the Habano in this Vitola for the show next month. So it's a new experience for us. We've got quite a bit of age on these. This is an Ecuadorian Connecticut. It has a nice little touch of Omatepe, a little Condega and Jalapa Lajero. So there's a little bit of spice and a little bit of depth in this cigar versus more of a traditional Connecticut, I think. Our intent was to create a crossover cigar, a cigar that would be enjoyable to those folks that do enjoy Connecticut, you know, that mild medium profile. But also for the medium plus smokers, it might reach back from a Habano or something that's slightly stronger than medium, reach back and smoke this and enjoy it. But more importantly, it's I'm not a big Connecticut smoker, John, as you said earlier. You're not either. It was a big stretch for me. And I've started to enjoy it quite a bit over the last few months as we've been smoking these. It's been a general... event-only cigar for the last couple of months, and moving into July, you're going to see this readily available in all of our retail partners. So, be exciting to share a little bit and see how we can stretch the profile out a little bit and see if we can find a couple of pairings that we might be able to really enjoy and promote to the other folks out there. Maybe they'll reach out to the liquor store, beer store, and be able to share some things with us.
Well, I think without a question, this is something, I mean, we talk about Connecticut's and coffee pairing. I think this is a lay down pairing. I mean, this and a really you know, a Cubano coffee or an espresso, I mean, forget about it. We won't even talk about it because it's just, it's, you know, right out of the park. So maybe we'll hop right into, and actually I wanted to mention, I'm really excited to try that Pennsylvania Broadleaf. It's kind of been sitting in my humidor. It's just so dark and so rich. I think that'll probably be next on my rotation. And thanks very much for sending us some samples for review.
Absolutely, John. Hey, just side note, make sure you see us the first day of the show. Sneak in because we will have a very few limited amount of the short panatella and the Pennsylvania broadleaf and the habano kind of just for the media set aside. So it'll be kind of first come, first serve. It's hard for me to say no, but it might be fun to grab those early on in the show.
Well, that'll be pretty easy to twist our rubber arms on that one, I think. So talking about some of the beer pairings, we'll hop right in here. I am going with something local. I've actually got three semi-local beers here. This one, I kind of like the design on it. You know, it kind of spoke to me. It's got like an old-style Trappist monk riding a pig backwards with two beers in his hand. And there's actually a pretty entertaining story that goes with that. This is the Pesky Pig Pale Ale. A little bit of alliteration there. It's kind of, I mean, it's got an ale color to it, but it's got that nice cloudiness to it. I've already been kind of cheating, and I'm taking some sips. It's got a lot more body to it than just a traditional regular ale. And at 5%, you know, that when you talk about body and strength, you would think 5% ale, and you kind of think, okay, well, that doesn't have a lot of strength. And that's true, but much like in the cigar world, you can have no strength but tons of body. And taking some sips of this beer already, it's got a lot of body to it. The story, the reason that this is called the Pesky Pig Ale, and I'll tell the story quickly because it's funny, but there was a pig named Francis the Pig, and in the summer of 1990s, 220-pound pig, he escaped the farm that he was at by jumping a wall, and he navigated around the slaughterhouse, avoided the slaughterhouse, and then he escaped into the parkland of Red Deer, which is where the brewery is actually located. And it was 5 months before he was captured. And instead of you know, slaughtering him, they kind of became a bit of a folk hero. And this is sort of raising a glass to the pig that beat the odds and managed to avoid the slaughterhouse. And, you know, they say they're rejoicing that he left the pastures on his own terms, and it just proves you can't tame a free spirit. And it kind of spoke to me, and I thought, you know, I already kind of like a lot of beers from Troubled Monk. This one sort of fits in really nicely. So I'm going to take some sips here, and Rob, I'll let you talk about your first pairing you get going on there.
That's a big pig to be jumping walls, man.
That's a big pig.
I don't have a lot of experience with pigs, but that sounds like a very large pig and a very short wall is what it sounds like. Yeah. Yeah. But hey, when you're trying to get out, you got to get out. So just a few notes real quick. This is the first time that I've smoked the Quick Draw Connecticut. Nice, creamy, sweet cream flavor up front.
Right.
Some cedar notes in there. And there's almost like a, I'm going to say like a white chocolate kind of flavor in there. But it's got more, it's got some spice to it. Relative like spice, nutmeg. Right? Yeah. It's not a super spicy cigar by any means, but it's got a little bit more of a kick. And I know that's been kind of the thing the last few years at Connecticut with the kick. But it's got the body is dialed up. Like you were saying, John, it's dialed up a little bit. It's not overly spicy for a Connecticut, but there's,
it's more interesting.
Yeah, I almost want to say kind of syrupy in the flavor. There's a lot going on there. Thick flavor notes. So really enjoying that so far. And I've actually already cheated on my first pairing because I've been sitting here listening about pigs jumping walls. So I figured, what the hell, I'll have a beer. I'm going to start with, and I've got three beers that are kind of in the same vein, and I might break out something else from the fridge and go in a different direction. But I'm going to start with the Allagash White, and this is from Allagash Brewery in Portland, Maine. They've been around since 1995, which just seems like forever for I guess you could still call Allagash a craft brewery. I don't know what the cutoff range is for craft breweries becoming, you know, big breweries and boutique cigar companies becoming big companies. I don't know where the cutoff is, but anyway, they've been around since 1995. They were started by founder Rob Todd in, Portland, Maine. The Allagash White's been around since 1995 as well. It's 5.1% ABV. They give me all the grains and everything in here, and it's got kind of a wit beer, so it's got that Belgian-y kind of flavor to it. And it's got some coriander in there, some orange peel, things like that. This is kind of the quintessential wit beer as far as I'm concerned. It's got that light, clean color to it, very hazy, very, very minimal head on this thing, but a little bit of lacing on there. It's definitely got that Belgian nose to it, but it's got kind of it's refreshing, but it's kind of creamy at the same time. and this pairing so far is going pretty well. It's kind of what I expected, and I was going for, you know, a light afternoon sitting on the beach type of pairing, and I feel like this is working out pretty well. I'm getting some unique flavors out of the beer that I wasn't getting before, but I'll pass it on to Robert so he can talk about his first pairing. And Robert, you went a completely different direction, at least than I did. I don't know if John kicked up the power a bit, but you're going with some big boys.
Yeah, I am. I've been able to smoke these cigars over the last year or so, so I've kind of toyed with the more traditional beers. But I tell you what I did today, guys. I wanted to take a different approach to our, you know, my pairing sitting down here in Texas. I went with more of the taste versus flavor, right? So I went in and I looked at the nose of certain beers, go into the beer store and you get to kind of sample a few things. I don't know how you guys do it out there, but, you know, you make a few friends, you get to try a few things. But I really didn't taste these beers. What I did, I went in and I got to spend a little bit of time and put my nose in there. And, you know, again, I kind of believe that 80% of the flavor is derived by that aroma. And I think tobacco is very similar in that sense. I think our taste, sometimes we forget perceived flavor, only about 20% of that's from the taste buds and the mouthfeel and maybe even the temperature for that matter. But I wanted to go with aroma. So I selected some aromas that I thought the first couple I'll get into are really complementary, I think. But then the last one, we're going to go opposite field hit, and we're going to try to see how something that might be a little bit of contrast might work. So what I started with is a wonderful ale from Rogue. Again, Ashland, Oregon. Most of you folks are familiar with Rogue. This is the Dead Guy Ale. The Dead Guy, 6.5% alcohol, so it's a little bit stronger than most, but really what I wanted, this is a kind of a traditional Maibock. Traditional Maibock is even a real term, right? It's an American spin on it, but the Maibock is really meant to be that April-May transitional period. It's a pretty hoppy, usually a double IPA kind of solution, but what I liked about it, back to the point you mentioned a minute ago, Rob, in your comments, I really, on the nose and even on the cold draw on the cigar, I get this syrupy, honey kind of richness to it, even before I light it. And what I really liked about this beer is this really golden honey color, not a lot of head, not a lot of carbonation to it, but it's got a real syrupy texture. It's got a viscosity that seemed to me like it'd work well. So much like you guys, I cheated a little bit. I've kind of got into it here. it's a wonderful beer. It's a richer beer, and it's a very malty beer, right? So, you know, those malty notes here with this first third of this quick draw seem to work out well. Most people do get a kind of a yeasty, you know, toasted bread kind of taste off this first third. So it's a very complimentary beer. It's a refreshing beer, and it's good to get us started here. And in a minute, I'll move over to one of the big boys at about 10%.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with the Dead Guy. I've spent a lot of time with the Dead Guy. I had a Halloween costume one year, and I was just kind of mailing it in, and I dressed up as Death. And I carried around they make the Dead Guy available in one-gallon jugs.
The growlers, yeah.
So I carried around a one-gallon jug of Dead Guy ale, and I managed to put all of it away that night. It was a rough morning the next day, but... there's a lot of interesting stuff. We've talked about Rogue a lot, and we may have even featured the Dead Guy before, but a great beer. So I'm curious to see how that pairs.
So talking about my first pairing here, I find with a lot of pale ales to me are sort of sitting on a patio somewhere when it's really hot. It's supposed to be very refreshing, not necessarily a lot of body to the beer. I mean, it's a light beer. And I think for me, a lot of pale ales tend to have a little bit of almost a metallic finish to them, which, you know, if you like it, you like it. For me, it can be a little off-putting. This pale ale goes in a completely different direction. So you get that sweetness of the pale ale up front, and then there's this huge amount. Obviously, they've kicked the IBUs up on this because you can taste the hops in this, but it's not overpowering. It doesn't taste like an IPA. It just tastes like a pale ale that has this really nice citrus quality to it, and it finishes in sort of a fruity sweetness. So it's taking away a lot of that really rich sweetness out of the cigar, and what it's bringing out of the cigar for me is it's kicking the spices up, like, immensely. So I'm taking a retrohale on the Southern Draw Quick Draw Connecticut, and I'm just getting tons of spices, where when I was smoking it previously, I was not getting that much spice influence on the retrohale of the regular draw.
Yeah, so I'll jump in here on the Allagash. And like I said, this Allagash is a wit beer. Everything that I'm dealing with tonight is wit beers. And if you're not familiar with a wit beer, think like Blue Moon or what's the other one? Shock Top. I think those are all, they're Belgian style whites. So basically that's a wit beer. It's a Belgian style ale, and it's always going to be unfiltered. So it's always going to have that kind of murky look to it, a little bit hazy. There's always going to be some wheat or oats that they use in the brewing process. It gives a lot more body to it, a little bit more of a kind of a creamy mouthfeel. And there's usually going to be some spice in there, some coriander, some orange peel, things like that. Which is why, you know, if you get a Blue Moon, they usually serve it with a little piece of orange. I take that out, but, you know, some people enjoy that. So I would say that these beers that I have tonight are akin to something like Blue Moon, but with flavor. I don't get a lot of flavor out of a Blue Moon. But these have a kind of a ramped up flavor profile. So this pairing's going basically the way I had hoped. It's that bright fruitiness from the beer is almost like a palate cleanser in between. There's not a lot of head on this, but it's kind of effervescent, you know. So that's got more of a palate cleansing aspect to it as well. And I'm getting, Robert, like you mentioned, I'm getting that honeyed note. And I really thought that was coming from the beer, but having heard you say it, I'm getting that on the retrohale, a lot of honey. And definitely getting those spices. The coriander is coming out in the beer a lot. And kind of a nutmeggy like spice, like you were saying, John, it's coming out of the quick draw. Very, very complimentary between the two. I feel like I'm not losing any flavor anywhere. All the flavors are kind of being ramped up a little bit by each other. It's kind of a perfect pairing. It's like John, like you were saying, it's a no-brainer to pair with coffee. And I think grabbing a wit beer like this is really kind of a no-brainer. It just fits so perfectly. So maybe I cheated a little bit going no-brainer. And I think I'm actually, while you guys are talking about your second pairings, I might throw a curveball and bring something else into the mix. But this is a fantastic start.
Robert, how's that dead guy all pairing for you?
You know, just going off the aromas to begin with, I think it gets an A for me. It's a very good transitional beer, right? It's moving from that spring into that kind of more of a summer style with a little more, you know, forwardness and a little more direct on the palate. It's got some nice richness, that little bit of honey. But even with the hoppiness that it has, it's really cut through with the sweetness a little bit. So, it's, you know, when you're smoking it with the Connecticut, there really should be a very mild-bodied, mild-flavored cigar. You know, having this little bit of bitterness and this little bit of sweetness contrasting in the cigar has just worked well with this beer. You know, I think, again, I'm going to kind of follow up on what Rob mentioned there is, you know, from a retrohale standpoint, it really has opened up this cigar and this beer to kind of a new experience for me. The first 5 or 6, 8, 10 minutes that I drank and smoked it, it was good. But with a couple of quick retrohales, I'm really starting to pick up a little more spice and a little bit more of that toasted or cake kind of profile in the cigar that I hadn't picked up previously. So quite enjoyable. It's a good transition, and I'm looking forward to kicking this thing up to about 10% on the next round.
Absolutely. Just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Bearings, Episode 74, Spotlight on Southern Draw Cigars. We're here with our guest, Robert Holt of Southern Draw Cigars. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined as always with my co-host, Robbie Raz, broadcast on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in wherever you're stationed in the world. We're doing a little pairing. We're doing some Connecticut's. Ecuadorian Connecticut. Ecuadorian Connecticut is kind of the Ecuadorian wrappers have kind of become the new hotness. I know everyone's going with that San Andreas Maduro, but you know, Ecuadorian wrappers are kind of making a pushback, and I'm excited because they're tasty. I like Ecuadorian Habano. I like Ecuadorian Connecticut, and this beer is going really well. I'm gonna be sad to let it go. I think we're probably gonna have to do another show here in the near future where we focus on doing some IPAs, because I think this cigar has enough body to stand up to an IPA.
Amen, brother. That would be great.
So I'm going to hop right into my second beer as the wind carries my beer can off to my neighbors down below, who are no doubt thrilled. I'm going on to something completely different, a smoked Hefeweizen. I saw this on the shelf. Again, I think this sort of fits the theme of low ABV, which is kind of the opposite of where Robert's taking this. I'm going low ABV, but a huge, huge body to it because it's a smoked Hefeweizen. It's kind of got plain packaging to it, but it, you know, I tend to find sometimes the plain packaging kind of stands out in the sense that they don't need the packaging to carry what their beer is. They want the flavor of the beer to carry what the beer is. And you can see this has huge, huge head on it. Big, foamy head. Very sort of similar in quality or color to the last beer, just a little bit darker. A little bit about, this is from Steel and Oak Brewing Company. I like the name. Kind of, you know, very manly. Located in New Westminster, British Columbia, Canada. They say they use a mixture of North American, English, and German style brewing. And they like to explore new beer styles while constantly refining and perfecting the classics. It's 5.2% ABV, 15 IBU, so keeping the bitterness down there. It is seasonal, it is unfiltered, and is unpasteurized. So you're going to get a pretty big flavor experience from that. They say that the description of the beer is, and this is definitely waxing poetic, smoke rises from the white pillowy head of the traditional Bamberg-style unfiltered wheat beer. Banana and clove weave through the beechwood smoked malts as hints of astringency play with the higher carbonations that dances on your tongue. I don't know about any of that, but I'm excited to take some sips. And Rob, maybe I'll get you to talk about your second pairing here. I don't know if you're going with something fancy or something that you already had on the list or what's going on there.
That was beautiful. That was beautiful, by the way.
Dances on your tongue.
Indeed it does. Indeed it does. And who are we to make fun? We talk about stuff like that all the time.
It's true.
I'm going to go ahead and skip my second pairing. I'll tell you guys what it was just to let you know. It was St. Archer White Ale. St. Archer is from San Diego, California. And it's another wit beer. Very, very similar. You can see it looks almost exactly the same as Allagash White. It's got a little bit more of an orange color to it. The flavor on the beer itself is very similar to Allagash, a little bit thinner in the flavor profile, a little bit more fruit, but to me, I feel like the pairing would have been very, very similar. So I'm going to jump ahead, and then for my final beer, I'm going to bring in something that's totally off the map here. So for my second pairing, another wit beer. This one is Blood Orange Wit from Refuge Brewing, I really like the artwork on this can. That was what sold me on it. I'd never heard of it before. And I saw this can, and I said, you know what? I think I just have to check it out. But they've got some interesting stuff going on. They've got like a flavor wheel on the back of their can here that tells you that this beer is going to have a lot of citrus. It's not very bitter. It's going to have some floral notes. It's going to be sweet. It's not very spiced, and it's not very malty. But it's just kind of a interesting little flavor wheel and a lot of information on the can.
This is a total side note, but I spent 6 months trying to make that work for Ning for cigars and finally just gave up because I couldn't. But I think flavor wheels are really cool because you can get an instantaneous visual map of what intensity of flavors and what type of flavors you get in a cigar or beverage. I love flavor wheels like that.
Cool. There's very little information about Refuge Brewing. They are located in Southern California. I can tell you that. They're in Temecula. But beyond that, you go to their website, and they've got the Blood Orange Wit. They just released a Grapefruit IPA, which I'm really eager to try. And if you click on the About Us section, it says, coming soon, but here's a pic from us from 4 years ago. So I guess they've... and one of the guys is like photoshopped in the bottom with big clown feet. I don't know. It's kind of funny, but I feel like I would get along with these folks had I met them. But I get the feeling they've only been around for a handful of years. Like I said, they've only got the two beers available. The Blood Orange Wit's Belgian-style wheat beer brewed with fresh blood oranges, 5% alcohol by volume, 16 IBUs. So not a lot of bitterness happening here. Very similar in profile to the Allagash. Like I said, they're both wheat beers. Let's see, I'll give a little bit of info here. They use over 200 pounds of fresh blood oranges in every batch. Didn't say how big a batch is, but that's a lot of blood oranges. Now, it doesn't really impact the color of the beer all that much. You can see it's got a little bit of an orange tinge to it. And I'll hold the Allagash up in my left hand just so you can see. Not a lot, but a little bit of an orange tinge to it. It's a bit clearer as well. It doesn't have that strong Belgian-y flavor on the nose, you know? You know that Belgian-y note, that kind of funk that's in there? It doesn't really have that quite as much. There's a lot more fruit on the nose. It's very, very fruit-forward. A lot of citrus. And I'm curious to see how the citrus aspect of this beer, while the spice is still there and that kind of creamy mouthfeel is still there because of the wheat, I'm curious how that's going to impact the flavor of the cigar here, how those two components are going to play around. Robert, what are you going with on your second pairing there?
Well, to use a term, I'm going to go big here, guys. Going with probably one of the top craft or boutique breweries in the country, we all heard about Dogfish Head. We're going to reach out to Delaware. This is the Burton Baton. Now, the key here, again, I wanted to go with a complimenting style, but I went big. This is a very similar color, again, a nice, rich honey. It's got a nice citrus on the nose. It's got a little bit of a woodiness and a vanilla kind of on the nose. But really what I liked about this is right there on the label, it says this has been oak-aged Imperial Pale Ale, oak-aged. So really this is a beer that is part Old English Style Ale and Imperial IPA that the last month before they bottle, they put it into oak and they age it out. It's becoming a very common technique, I think, some of these barrel-aged beers. Some of the best, I think, you know, Ballast Point that I can mention that I've had, but this technique has really intrigued me. So the first couple of sips here, guys, you do get that pronounced citrus. This is a 70 IBU beer.
Woo.
But I'll tell you, with this little bit of sweetness and even the bitterness that I'm getting out of this second, third of this little cigar, I see a little bitterness and yeah, there's cedar, but I get more of an oaky quality to it on the woody side. It's more of an oaky or a charred oak, and maybe it's that El Matape, but I find it complimentary well, but it's really suppressed the bitterness of that beer. It's a nice, clean, long finish to the beer, but that little bit of caramel and sweetness, and, again, a very thick, high viscosity beer, but at the end, it finishes with a nice little char on the back of the throat, almost like a bourbon. That oak has really developed well. And this first couple of sips here at this cigar has just been pretty impressive.
Well, I think that kind of lends itself to the fact that I think Rob and I are definitely going to have to do a Redux show on this Quick Draw Connecticut, because, you know, I think there's when people think of Connecticut, they just sort of think of very light. But this does have so much body to it that I think it does stand up to some of those bigger qualities and some of those IPAs. And I think it would be interesting to try, even huge Imperial IPAs just to see what would happen. And we talk about it all the time on Sharing Our Pairings. Some of the best pairings we've had are the ones we don't expect. So I think it could be interesting. Talking about this smoked Hefeweizen, this is taking me into the funky category. Which is kind of what I wanted to do. I wanted to shake things up a little bit from my pale ale. It's different. It's bringing out a whole range of flavors from the cigar that I was not getting previously. I'm getting a lot of a really strong leather from the cigar, but I'm also getting almost a charred, kind of like a creme brulee. So, you know, like you get that charred caramel. And I definitely was not getting that at all when I smoked it for the review. So it's almost as if these are what I would describe as very contrasting. The cigar is almost fighting for supremacy in flavor profile. But it's interesting because I'll take a sip of the beer and I'll get a different flavor from the beer. I'll take a draw off the cigar or I'll retrohale. And, you know, I almost get different notes every time I'm doing it. So they're not complimentary at all. But it's still an interesting experience for me. And I'm going to take some more sips here and let Rob talk about how his second pairing is going.
Not quite as good as the first. and Robert, once I saw that you were pairing with that Burton Baton, which as we talked about it off air, I totally screwed the name up. But I picked up a 4-pack of those, I want to say last year. And that beer actually ages really well. And I was curious to see how that pairing would go. And with there's a lot of sweet notes that you're going to get off that beer, like you were talking about. And having tasted the cigar now, I could see that pairing would go pretty, pretty well. So back to the Blood Orange Wit from Refuge Brewing. There's certain things that work, and it's the same stuff that worked with the Allagash. It's light. It's got that creamy mouthfeel from the wheat, I beg your pardon. And that part of it pairs really well. There's some sweetness that comes out. You're getting that spice, that kind of coriander spice that's coming out of the beer, elevating that spice in the cigar on the retrohale, still getting that honeyed note on the nose. The blood orange flavor is a little bit off-putting in the pairing. It doesn't. It's like the beer pairs.
Is it sour or is it?
Well, it's just kind of funky. It's like the beer pairs well with the cigar, and then the orange shows up.
Yeah.
So it just kind of throws a monkey wrench in the whole thing. It's a good beer. It's actually a very good beer on its own, and I do like it. It's very refreshing. It's a nice sunny day beer. This pairing, not quite the best. It's okay, but I don't feel like I'm doing anything special for the beer, and it's definitely not doing the cigar any justice. So This is easily, no matter what happens next, this, well, I shouldn't say that, but for the most part, this will probably be the worst pairing of the night. But the Allagash is still going pretty well, so let's see. I'm curious to see how my next one goes. I'm excited about this beer. Robert, how's that? The baton still going well?
Yeah, it's going well. And I tell you, over this last 3 to 5 minutes on the patio here, as warm as it is, it's transitioned for quite a bit. And, you know, something I'm learning a little more about just through wonderful homework like this is, you know, what portion of the flavor of the experience does temperature and texture and mouthfeel really contribute, right? We get the aromas and we get the flavors, but that the temperature on this thing has changed so much that it now has a nice dry finish. It becomes more of a sipper, like a nice bourbon with that oakiness to it. And I'm really enjoying that with the cigar, because the second third of this short Panatella, it's burning slower. I've really stopped smoking it more aggressively like I did the first third, but it became a nice sipper with this Dogfish Head. And for me, I mean, it really woke that palate up. It really got me kind of anxious for the next one, right? It's got a nice dry finish, but I still got that sweetness, and I got that that oakiness on the nose and the mouth, which again typically is reserved for a nice bourbon. So it's working well for me. I think even over the next 5 or 6 minutes, I'm still going to reach over and try it again just to see how this thing finishes up, even when I move on to the third beer.
Nice. Well, I think it just goes to show you that the length to which this cigar can be paired. I mean, you're pairing with something that's 10%. I'm pairing with something that's 5%. We're all over the board here on flavor profiles, and yet the cigar is still sort of holding its own. And that's exciting for us on sharing our pairings. It's just to try tons of different pairings and see what works. And part of the fun is the journey, even for the stuff that doesn't necessarily work. And just a reminder to our audience, you're tuned into Sharing Our Pairings, episode 74, Spotlight on Southern Draw Cigars, with our guest Robert Holt of Southern Draw Cigars. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are broadcast around the world, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Wherever you're stationed in the world, I hope you're staying safe and being entertained by our 58 minutes of tomfoolery. So I'm going to move on to my last beer here. I picked it up. And this just goes to show you can't judge a book by its cover. I saw this on the shelf. It's the Daggerad Blonde, and I thought, okay, you know, it's a nice light blonde ale piece of cake. But if you look in really small letters there, it says strong ale. It is a strong ale. It is 7.5%. It's a heater. And you would not be able to tell just by looking at the glass. I mean, this looks like a nice, just a regular friendly ale that's not going to knock you on your tail sitting in a patio somewhere, but you would be mistaken. A little bit about Daggerad Brewing. They're located in Burnaby, British Columbia, Canada. They're named after the Daggerad Platz, which is a neighborhood square on the east side of Antwerp, Belgium, of all places. The name Daggerad means daybreak or sunrise in Flemish. So what's interesting about this is they talk about this having a fruity, citrusy aroma. And it does remind me of that sort of Belgian-style brewing where you get a lot of that fresh I want to say a vegetal note, like you're sitting in a field of wheat, that sort of fresh note to the nose. And I'm excited because they say this complements a lot of different beverages and a lot of different foods. They say it's really good with salads and desserts. It's got tartness. It's got effervescence. So I'm excited to try this because I think this is taking the beer pairing for me in a completely different direction. So I'm going to take some sips here while Rob talks about his third pairing of the night.
Yeah, I'm going to switch things up here a little bit, like I said. And when we were getting ready for the show and I was looking through my fridge and trying to see what I had that would work, and went down to BevMo and kind of walked through the aisles to see what would if they had something that I thought would work. I saw a few coffee-infused brown ales, and I thought coffee and Connecticut makes a whole lot of sense.
And absolutely.
Let's maybe try that with a beer, and I almost did it. And for whatever reason, I decided to stick with the wit beers. Luckily, I had one here in my fridge. It's not a brown ale. It is a coffee-infused pale ale, I believe. Make sure that, it's pale ale.
And I'm not sure I've ever heard of that before.
Yeah, it's interesting. And this is from a brewery called a Rust Holler, and they're in Sacramento, California. They've been around since 2010. As far as I can tell from the website, it doesn't actually say, you know, established in 2010, but as I've been reading through, That's one of the dates that sticks out is they've been putting up their own recipes and things since 2010. They're kind of an interesting brewery. I'm looking through their website. It's rusthollerbeer.com. It's R-U-H-S-T-A-L-L-E-R beer.com. They do some really interesting stuff. They've got this area they call the farm and the yard. The farm is 1 acre, and it includes, it's a hop demonstration area, a hop kiln, and an event space where you can have events there, and they're growing hops. It's a 1 acre space that they have up in Sacramento. And they have, and the yard is actually 7.5 acres where they're growing their own hops. They're growing Cascade, Nugget, and Centennial this year.
Sounds like someone needs a trip to the farm there.
Yeah, it sounds like a good field trip for the wife and I. But it looks really cool. I knew that they grew their own hops. Actually, Dana was my wife was driving home from Lake Tahoe. She has some work stuff that she has to do up in Lake Tahoe every now and again, and she drove by and she took a picture. And there was a Rusthollerbeer sign because we had talked about this brewery. But this is the first beer I've had from them. I have 7 or 8 of them in the fridge, but this is the first one I've cracked open. And she drove by where they were growing their own hops. But they work with local farmers to grow their own malt and everything too. So everything is, I don't know, I assume it's all very green and sustainable and things of that nature, whatever's cool to say these days. But it just seems kind of cool. It's all very, it's all California grown, and they're keeping everything in-house, so to speak. So I think that's pretty cool. To talk a little bit more about the beer, it's a pale ale, and it's brewed using fresh cold brewed Kenyan coffee from I'm probably going to jack this up. Camellia Coffee Roasters in Sacramento. So it's really really interesting. The nose on this thing, and I haven't taken a sip yet. It's very different from what I've been drinking. The nose is really syrupy. It's got kind of a coffee candy kind of flavor to it. A little bit of caramel in there as well. It smells really really good. The color on this thing is, kind of a deep amber, I guess you'd say. It's got much thicker head on it than the other beers that I was sampling. So really, really curious how this one's going to work. God, the nose is really, really, it's sweet, and it's coffee, and it's fantastic. This is this one might be a winner. We'll see. But they have this is Mr. Rusthaller on there, and I always thought that was Frankenstein because it kind of looks like Frankenstein on the bottle there, but I guess this is the Mr. Rusthaller, Captain Frank Rusthaller in 1918. So I apologize for thinking that he was Frankenstein. It has that look to it. Anyway, we'll move forward. So Robert, you've got a big mamma jamma for your last one. I know that.
Sorry, you guys cut out a bit. So we're over to my heavy hitter, guys. We're gonna go bigger than ever. This is Avery Brewing, one of those wonderful Colorado craft breweries that's been around some time. They've spun off some pretty good beers. This is part of the Holy Trinity of Ales, the Reverend. And I guess with my title of Chief Evangelist, it really works well here. But this is a Belgian-style quadruple ale. So we're going to go pretty big here with about a 10% ABV, but a very low IBU at about 24%, right? Or 24. Now, what I wanted to do here on my third pairing, again, I went with the nose to begin with, but I kind of wanted to look at the spectrum and say, let's do something contrasting. Let's go with the biggest beer, the fullest bodied, lowest bitterness. Let's really get something rich and syrupy. It's got a very heavy viscosity, and let's try this out. So, what I still enjoyed was the nose on this thing. It's so malty. It has some wonderful spices to it. Again, it's not a lot of head on these beers. You got to dive right into it. The aromas are absolutely gorgeous. The color is gorgeous on this, but you can tell it's almost like a barley wine if you look at it. It almost has legs. What are we drinking, a Cabernet over here?
Yeah.
But it's got these bourbon notes and this oaky note still to it. I'm thinking, hey, maybe this will work out. It's slightly chilled. It's warmer out here than I anticipated, so it's not as cold as one might like. I think being colder, this thing would be a much richer beer. But I'm gonna take a few more tastes here, and then we'll get back to it in a minute. But initially, it's not as contrasting as I thought it might be. I thought this Connecticut, being as light as it is, would really be on the opposite end of the spectrum. But this thing's playing well so far. We're gonna give it a few minutes to warm up a bit.
So talking about my first pairing here, this Daggerad Blonde, I think this is the pairing of the night for a number of reasons. First of all, you look at this beer and you don't, you know, again, it's got a very ale-like quality to it, but the beer is really as if a Belgian triple and a pale ale had a love child. That would be this beer. Yeah, it's the sort of light quality of a pale ale, but there's all of these underlying deep fruit notes. And the mouthfeel on this, I would liken it to, if you've ever, and I'm sure we all have, taken a can of whipped cream and squirted it right in your mouth. I mean, it's just so light and fluffy. And what it's doing for the cigar is it's just amazing. So what I'm getting out of the cigar is it's almost becoming a dessert cigar. Like, I'm literally getting just gobs of sweetness with, it, to me, it's almost like a spice cake where I get the sweetness of a cake, then I get that nice spicy quality to it. And you just wouldn't think that these two beverages would go well together because they've kind of gone all over the flavor map here with the three beers. But this is, unfortunately or unfortunately for the other breweries, this is by hands down the pairing of the night for me. These two go together perfectly. This is my perfect pairing of the night for sure. So I'm going to mute myself as I make some strange sounds as I sip this beer and smoke this cigar and let Rob talk a little bit more about his last and final pairing there.
You stole my thunder with your spice cake comment.
That's so good.
Because it's very, very similar to the experience I'm having here. Now, this is a really, really interesting beer. The nose is thick and syrupy, and so I was bracing myself for a thicker beer, a little bit more viscosity to it. And it actually kind of caught me off guard. It's surprisingly thin on the mouthfeel, but it's not thin on flavor. I don't know how you call this a pale ale. I guess that's the only thing you could really call it. There's some hoppiness to it, not much. I think the IBUs were 46, which still seems a bit high based on what I'm tasting here. It's coffee forward, big time. You get that coffee right off the front, and it almost tastes like an iced coffee in a way, but it's got a little bit of that hoppiness to it. And that some effervescence from the beer and a little bit more sweetness and some caramel notes in there as well that carry over really, really nice with that sweet cream that we were talking about from the body of the cigar. That honey is still there. And then when you hit that retrohale and you get the spices from the cigar and the retrohale, that really does have a spice cake quality to it where it's got that thick sweetness, but that nice spice right on the top, not overpowering by any means. It is spicy for a Connecticut, but it's not a spicy cigar.
No.
And the coffee flavor from this goes almost exactly as well as you would think. Like, this is kind of perfect. 6.2% ABV, so it's not too big, but it's not too small. It's just right. Like, this pairing is really, really good. I'm glad that I called an audible and went with this one. I think
Omaha.
This is a...
Omaha.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chicken farm, you taste so good.
it reminds me of Wedding Crashers when they're playing football on the island,
mm-hmm.
and he says, "Red 7, hot route, hot route." It's like,
I don't know what that means.
Just go stand over there. Yeah, I called an audible and went with the hot route, and this is really good, man. This is it's more of a winter style beer, even though I think this has some nice spring qualities to it because it's not too heavy. When you talk about a more of a winter style ale, it's going to have more of that spice to it. This is kind of a nice, I don't want to say spring morning beer because, you know, we shouldn't really talk about morning beers, but sometimes you have to have one when you're camping or something, and there you go. It's just, this pairing is really good for me, man. I'm really, really glad that I went with this. Robert, how's the quad working?
Well, given my intent was to, again, go the opposite end of the spectrum here, I figure light versus dark, that light Connecticut versus a very dark, rich quadruple ale. I thought maybe that stronger beer with the more subtle cigar, I might try to create some very unique differences, right? Maybe accentuate some of these differences. And quite honestly, I failed at that. That's the bad news. The good news is this beer, even at 10%, you think it's a big, strong beer. Again, you know, look at the color. It's a nice, dark, rich, fruity texture, a very high viscosity beer. But what really is highlighted in this is the malt. It's not the hops. It's, you know, I started out with some pretty hoppy beers, and those hoppy beers had that nice citrus texture to it, had a little spiciness, had a little bitterness. This beer is not that. The Belgian malts that they used in this, ended up being very complimentary. Their sorghum or molasses, they're very, again, carrot cake kind of qualities to it, not necessarily spice cake. There's a little sweetness, not just a spice to it, but it's that yeasty, toasty kind of bread. So it turned out to be very complimentary. And again, it's one of those beers that, as it sat here for a few minutes, it became a nice sipper. It, you know, think back to the original intent of this blended cigar. This blend was really the influence behind it. If you kind of read what I wrote in the tasting notes, was I wanted to have a cigar that had that sweet creaminess that a Connecticut expects, but I really wanted to blend those characteristics of a Cuban coffee, the strength of espresso, and the lightness of the cream, but also that little burst of flavor from that sugar, especially a hydrolyzed type sugar, where they really take the time to whip it up when you make a nice Cuban coffee with a nice crema on top. But this beer did something very similar. It created a nice, rich texture with a lot of bold flavors that ended up complementing more than it did contrasting. And, you know, I'll keep doing some homework, and I think maybe at another point we'll find something that contrasts and maybe accentuate some things that we didn't pick up. But it fell right in line. I think these three pairings kind of went in a good order for me. They warmed up slightly over the time that we're out here, and it worked out well for me. And, you know, I'm down to this last third of the cigar. It's still burning well, but it's been a new experience on this side of the table, going with these higher alcohol beers and richer, you know, fuller bodied beers versus this little light petite, you know, or short panatella, if you will.
It's the short panatella that could, I think, because it seems to be doing very, you know, it's as they say, fighting well out of its weight class, because it has had no problem standing up to all the beers tonight. And I think, you know, we're, and kind of already alluded to this, I think I'm definitely going to have to feature this on a future show, because I've already, in my mind, imagined that I want to try this with a Belgian triple. I want to try it with an IPA. And I could see this going really well with, because the smoked Hefeweizen that I had, it's funky, it's interesting, it's different, and I kind of want to try a Marzen or something very out there with this cigar and just kind of see how far we can push that flavor profile. Going back through my pairings, the Troubled Monk was really interesting, that pesky pig ale. It's too much for alliteration for me tonight. It had that citrus quality to it, which I think if it was just a regular ale would just be boring. I don't think it would be the best pairing, because it doesn't have enough character. It doesn't have enough body to stand up to the cigar. The fact that it's got that citrus hoppy quality to it without being big hop forward is really interesting. And it pairs well. The Steel and Oak smoked Hefeweizen, that smoked Hefeweizen was funky. It was different. It took the cigar in a completely different direction. But there's no question this Daggerad Blonde is the hands-down winner of the night. I already said it was a hands-down winner of the night, and it continues to be, because it's got a mouthfeel, it's got a lot of body to it, it's got the fruity hints, and it's sort of drawing everything that the cigar has to offer out. So for me, hands-down pairing of the night. Rob, what was your highlights for the three pairings you did tonight?
Well, we started off well with the Allagash White, and I mean, to me, that's kind of a no-brainer pairing, right? It's you know, it's a lighter beer. It's got a little bit of creaminess to it, a little bit of spice, and you're going with a Connecticut that's got some creaminess, got some spice. They complemented each other very, very well. I feel like that could be the type of pairing that, you know, I sit down with two or three Allagash Whites and maybe two or three of these little Pantellas and have a nice day, you know, and I'm happy with it. And the cigars aren't going to blow me out. And the beer's not going to blow me away at 5%. I'd be, you know, I'm not going to be doing any algebra when I'm done, but I'll be fine, you know. So that for me, that pairing works really, really well. And I don't think we've ever really done any wit beers on the show, so I think maybe that was my drive here to get something like that a little bit different and hopefully paired well. And that one did. The blood orange wit for me, not quite as much. I mean, the orange just really kind of threw everything out of whack. There were certain flavors in there that worked, and then the orange just kind of peeked up and said, "Hey guys, how's it going?" You know, and took over the show. Didn't really work out for me. But this Rust Hauler kit, the Kenyan from Sacramento, this is the star of the show. This is a really unique beer. The more that I'm sipping on it, the more I'm enjoying it. I'm gonna have to go pick up another one and have it on a fresh palate and do a review for Mixed and Mashed, just so we can talk about this a little bit. But it's creamy. It's light. It's not very hoppy. It's coffee forward, but that coffee forward is coffee forward for the first few sips, and then your palate gets used to it. So the coffee is just, it's more complementary than like the focus of the beer, if that makes sense. So it's almost like a coffee cream ale in a way. And I do love a coffee cream ale. If you talk to Matt on Cigar Federation, he's got that carton regular coffee imperial cream ale. Forget about it. That's fantastic. That'd be a really good pairing here. That coffee, that creaminess pairs so well with this cigar because it's got that creamy sweet cream base flavor for me. That spice on the retrohale, a little bit of that honey, really does. And carrot cake, Robert, might even be a better description than spice cake. I think I'm getting a little bit more spice from this than that extra sweetness. But anyway, some kind of cakey, spicy flavor that's awesome. It goes really, really well with this particular beer. So if we do this again, I'm definitely going to go pick up. I saw a couple of coffee-infused brown ales, and I think that we may be onto something. Coffee-infused Absolutely. Brown ale with Connecticut might be a thing that we definitely need to focus on. But I'm glad that we did it, and I'm glad that we checked out some of these wit beers as well. This is one hell of a versatile cigar. We've said this a few times in the last few shows, but we've got 9 beers here, and they're all really different. I mean, we go all the way from a quadruple to a wit beer to a barrel-aged, I think that Baton is a barrel-aged pale ale, I think. And to a coffee-infused pale ale, I mean, and then the smoked Hefeweizen. We're all over the map, and 95% of these were really good. With just the blood orange was the only one that didn't work. So I think that says a lot that we might underestimate the Connecticut wrapper cigar as far as pairing is concerned. So, Robert, how about you? What was your favorite?
Well, I think, first of all, I appreciate the fact that we kind of went all over the map here. You know, we tried to create a crossover blend, as I mentioned earlier, and as someone that doesn't smoke a lot of Connecticuts, it's very important for me to try some new things with you guys and other folks. It's part of our homework, but I like to see if we can create an experience that neither one of them can offer by themselves, right? I think we've successfully done that. I'll say this, when we bring those coffee-infused beers, that's really, that coffee profile was really the base for this blend. We really wanted to create something that celebrated the Cuban coffee, you know, experience, whether it's a morning cafe cubano or a colada at lunch. And I've written about that. People can kind of look on the site for that. But what I really want to try, and that really I'm intrigued by now that we've tried this and we see this spicy carrot cake, malty, oaky kind of profile come out, I want to see us try some Martsons and some Saisons. Mm-hmm. I really want to reach into something that really, really is fruity and really spicy. And it's, you know, average, you know, that 5, 6, 7, 8 ABV, but, you know, not a big beer, but something with some real depth of that fruit and spice characteristic that I think we could really pull a little more out. So I think if we do something similar, we should bring in some of those coffee-infused beers. We should really get some with some real spice characteristics. But the winner to me today for my three, I hate to say it because it's the biggest of all of them, was certainly the Dogfish Head, the Burton Baton. You know, from the nose, that citrus woodiness from the hops, it just complemented very well. But what happened over a little bit of time is that little caramel sweetness plus that pretty high IBU that we talked about, right? When you're talking about 70 IBU, that's there. You know, it's really in your face. But with this cigar, guys, it wasn't. It cleansed the palate. It really created a very simple sipping beer type scenario where you could sip on it like a bourbon and really enjoy this cigar for what these small ring gauge. It's really tough to smoke these aggressively, right? So the Dogfish Head wins it hands down. The other two kind of opened my palate up and made me realize that we have a pretty good range here. But what I'm really looking forward to in the near future is as we expand and we beat this FDA deadline at the show, we're going to start sharing a few of a new core line that is also going to be a medium body, medium flavored Connecticut that's going into our core line that we'll talk a little bit about at the show. And we'll make sure that you guys are in on that too. But it's been a great experience. I've enjoyed it greatly.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to talking to you at the show. We've got we've talked about it on previous shows. We've got a lot of guys coming down. We've got two camera crews. And we're going to be doing our best to get the best in show video coverage. Robert, maybe tell our audience a little bit where they can find a little bit more information about your cigars and contact you on social media.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, thank you very much. It's always good getting with you guys, and it's even fun after the fact to go back and share the show and the link. You know, Southern Draw Cigars, here we are in Austin, Texas, you know, manufacturing out of Esteli, Nicaragua, and southerndrawcigars.com. There you'll see some general information. It's not a one-man show. I would be remiss if I didn't mention my wife, Sharon, that runs our customer service distribution. Really a special touch to this business. On Facebook at Southern Draw, we have dropped the cigars to kind of take that reference. If Facebook gets happy and really starts taking down cigar sites, it's Southern Draw. And on Twitter and Instagram, it's SD Cigars. We're very active, and we're enjoying the journey here. We appreciate everybody at Cigar Media Association, obviously Cigar Federation. Our cigars are also available on Cigar Federation on the online store. And I hear some rumor that you guys are going to be expanding that presence here in the near future as we move out to some of the East Coast markets like Delaware, home of Dogfish Head, where those cigars will be available. Again, Robert at Southern Draw Cigars, you can reach me anytime, and I respond to 100% of all messages. And we just look forward to spending more time and getting through the summer together. And as we all kind of use an IPCPR term, we band together to kind of fight the things that are ahead of us. And I think together we can do it.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you on, Robert. And one quick thing about the website. One of the things I really love about your website is that there's a dearth of information, not only about the cigar, but about recommended pairings. And, you know, you've given a lot of background information on the cigars. And we always appreciate that when we can go on there, see a ton of information, see some pairings, and get a starting point there. I really appreciate that.
I'm happy that you said dearth.
Dearth.
Yeah.
That's the word of the night.
We brought our acumen level up pretty high with dearth, even though I misused acumen right there, but that's okay.
So thanks very much for all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there. As Rob says every week, we appreciate you out there doing things that we are not geared to do, keeping us safe wherever you are in the world. Hope you've been entertained by the 58 minutes of podcast that we've had out on there on the live Armed Forces Radio Network broadcast. We'll be back next week. I think we're probably going to be doing the Herrera Esteli and some IPAs. I think that's currently leading the popular vote out there on the Twitter sphere. We've had some people voting, and I think that's currently leading the pack. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. All right, so that ends our Armed Forces Radio Network segment. We are still live and picked up on podcast. Robert, thanks so much for being on the show. It was a lot of fun, and we very much appreciate you sharing this cigar with us, because this is really good. Rob, what is your thoughts now, having smoked most of the cigar, knowing that I rated this a 94? Am I crazy? Is it delicious?
No, I don't think you're crazy at all. And this was originally supposed to be and I'm a broken record here. This was supposed to be a group review, and I was supposed to be involved in it. And obviously I wasn't. I think had I been involved, I think my score would have been right around there with yours. You combine the smokeability of the cigar, the ring, the size. I love the size, because this is a good, yeah. you can smoke the cigar 45 minutes to an hour. I like that size. And even the Petite Corona, that's the other size, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
The Petite Corona, it's the same ring gauge, correct?
Sir. The Petite Corona is a 4.5 44.
Okay.
The short Panatella, by definition, maybe it's not, but short Panatella is a 5.5 by 40.
40. Okay. So the Petite Corona is a little bit thicker in ring gauge. I'd be curious to try that out, just to see how that. I know you were talking about the flavor profile is a little bit different, but one thing that I want to mention, if I feel like we could do a show with this cigar for each season, because I'm thinking about some Oktoberfest beers.
Yeah,
I'm thinking about and then taking that one step further, like some of those spiced winter ales that come out.
When you're talking about the spiciness, was totally there. Winter spiced ale for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one particular beer that I know we did on this show a couple of years ago, and I track it down every year because I really like it. And it's from Oakshire Brewing in Oregon, and it's called the Angry Gnome. And it's their winter ale, and it's got a nice spice to it. And I feel like that particular beer, and it's funny, I haven't had that beer in 6 months, but that's the first thing that pops into my head. I feel like something like that, that's along those lines, it's a darker ale, got a little bit of that, some of those winter spices to it, almost like a mulling spice. I think that could pull out some really, really interesting flavors. Curious to see what this would do with an IPA as well. But yeah, there's a lot that we could do with this beer, or with this cigar. I feel like we've done a lot with it in one show, but we could feature it again, definitely. But the coffee brown ales or the coffee infused ales of any kind, even almost like a coffee porter maybe, might work. Mm-hmm. I don't know if a porter might be a little bit heavy, but maybe something like Victory at Sea from Ballast Point. I love that beer. Might be something kind of good. That's got that vanilla in there, so that maybe not, but. City of the Dead from Modern Times, my favorite coffee stout. That might be a little bit heavy, but I'd be curious to give it a shot. Absolutely.
Ballast Point's always a go-to for us just because of our friendships and, I guess, our time in San Diego. It's been a great success story. They've got some barrel-aged beers that I'm not sure if they're putting them on the market, but they do have them there locally, barrel-aged whiskey and rum barrel. And there will be an event with Southern Draw coming up. It's being planned now, where there'll be four new barrel-aged beers with two or four Southern Draw cigars, which Michelle and Shelley and Kyle and Bill, I have to mention those guys in San Diego, are working on. I'll make sure you guys get an invite. It's worth your time, Rob, especially since it's just down the coastline for you. But stay tuned for that. But I tell you this, come Oktoberfest, when we get to the end of September, when we start seeing these seasonal releases, what we ought to do is we ought to get the Ecuadorian Dark Habano, the Pennsylvania Broadleaf, both in the new short Panatella, and this cigar in the Petit Corona, and we ought to do kind of a threesome because, you know, 20 to 30 minutes on each one of those cigars, you're going to get the gist of them, but it might be fun not just to go with one cigar, but maybe three, where we can come up with infinite amount of opportunities there to pair those things up. It might be kind of a fun event in October to do that.
You know, that's something we actually haven't done on the show yet is doing more than one cigar. And we're always, we just celebrated our 2-year anniversary on the show. So we're always looking for ways to push the envelope. And I think three cigars on one show could be a lot of fun for sure.
We've toyed with that idea a couple of times. And John, I remember specific conversations where we talked about it. And weren't really sure how to pull it all together. But going with, you know, the three different from the Quick Draw series, all from Southern Draw, that makes a lot of sense. That there's some continuity there. I think that to go with three random cigars, it's hard to pull that together. Even if you stick with the same company with a lot of companies, yeah. It's hard to find something that would transition from, you know, that mild to medium to full. I think that might be a lot of fun. It would be... probably one of our longer shows, but I think it could be a lot of fun to do something like that. I would definitely be interested. And I really can't wait for this this event with Ballast Point. I love some of the stuff that Ballast Point does. And all that, I think like 90% of their barrel-aged stuff they just have on tap. And I love that Victory at Sea, but they've got Victory at Sea that they age it in so many different ways. I see it on their website. It's like, oh, it's aged in this barrel and that barrel, this barrel. Like, oh, I want to try it. But they don't have it up here. So, maybe I could talk my wife into taking a trip down to San Diego. Who knows?
You got to do it. You know, SA is in charge of the barrel age program there and absolutely phenomenal beer maker. What a passion. But he can extract flavors and profiles that it just takes a scientific approach to things. It's pretty amazing. We've done a little homework on it. But I'll make sure you guys get an invite and let's see if we can get it, at a time that'll be convenient for at least one or more of you guys to show up, and we'll enjoy it. Maybe we'll cover it down there. Maybe we'll do it together. That'll be kind of fun. And what we also will, I think, we're doing on that event, I'll have to confirm with powers that be. I think we're bringing in a local chocolatier to add a third element, which will be some handmade chocolates that will be paired with the beers and the cigars. It should be a pretty exciting event.
Oh, that sounds like a blast, man. And being the budding brewer that I am, getting down there and being able to spend time with anybody who's making beers that are as popular and as tasty as the stuff that's coming out of Ballast Point would be that would be a coup for me to be able to spend some time with those guys. So yeah, let's try to make that happen. But they're making some great stuff. And when you start bringing chocolate into the equation, forget about it. Forget about it. Yeah. We actually did a chocolate pairing show, didn't we, John?
We did, yep.
And that, if I remember, the chocolate went really well. It's kind of weird to pair
food and cigars,
but I mean, you're not chewing on the chocolate and smoking the cigar at the same time, obviously, but it's really no different than pairing with something that you're drinking, really. So, yeah.
You know, I've always been a fan. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that don't necessarily like smoking and eating, but whenever I have the opportunity, because of course up here in Canada, it's not really possible to have a meal or have anything in a cigar unless I'm doing it myself. So I'm always down for the opportunity to do any kind of food pairing and a cigar pairing. I mean, I'm all over that for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's I can see it definitely at least one or two more quick draw shows before the year is out. And I say before the year is out, it's already past mid-June. I can't believe mm-hmm. it. But
well, not to put a teaser out there, I said, but you know, with the looming FDA regulation, that August 8th date coming very quickly, I know you guys and everybody else is going to be so busy at the show, but you're going to see, our 2017-2018 planned releases are going to be in a very limited format, but we're going to have them there. We've got some pretty exciting things coming out, and we're not just extending the core lines that we have with some Lanceros and other things that are pretty exciting, but we've got a couple of special things that are going to come out to you guys on the media at the show that are kind of re-blends of current Kudzu Firethorn kind of blends, and it's going to be pretty exciting. The Kudzu and Firethorn, you know, God bless that relationship with AJ Fernandez and those folks. They've done phenomenal work for us, but it's such an exciting time that we get to open presents early. You know, I mean, sometimes we talk about how negative this FDA thing is, but the beauty is we don't have to wait. We get to put them out even if it's in a limited capacity. We all get to try them. So we're going to have some fun at the show, and the months ensuing after that, it's going to be a great fun time in the industry.
Yeah, I've often had that thought since we've been talking about this, and we talked with some other manufacturers that we've had on Cigar Chat, and you know, everybody's 5-year plan is being pushed into a 2-month plan, which is really unfortunate, and I don't really want to go down that road again. But there's going to be so much stuff happening. I think this is going to be an IPCPR to remember, hopefully for good reasons. But there's going to be a lot going on. I'm excited and looking forward to it. It's going to be busy, but we just had our before the show here, we had a group meeting to kind of strategize and plan out how we were going to attack things. And I feel pretty confident that our best in show video coverage of IPCPR is going to continue. Again, we don't normally toot our own horn, but this is one thing that I'll toot proudly is our video coverage of IPCPR. Thanks to John with his quality video. It doesn't matter how stupid my questions are. If it looks good, people will watch. So that's the good thing. But no, I'm excited. It's going to be fun. And this was a great show. I feel like this is a cigar that people are going to want to smoke. And now these are available now, correct?
They are. What we did is over the last few months, we used them as an event-only cigar so that kind of our philosophy, and I think we talked about it back in October when we chatted, was we want to make sure we have some cigars at events where people are buying boxes and, you know, multiples, that they get a cigar that's not for sale in the shop yet. So the Connecticut in the Petit Corona and the Short Panatella, we have a limited amount of 10-count bundles all the way through the show. At the show, we will release the boxes along with our Lanceros for the Kudzu and Firethorn, which are going to be exciting for you guys to try, I think, as well. But and then we have some new products that will be event-only cigars through the end of the year that will go into full production at the end of the year for spring 2017 release. So, but anybody that wants them, again, Robert at Southern Draw Cigars, right, at, you know, cigars.com right now, we'll make sure if we point them to the right shop, we'll make sure those shops have access to them and get them in their hands.
Awesome.
And I think one of the things we really didn't talk about, Robert, during the show was the fact that the price point on these is absurdly approachable. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's $6 MSRP. Is that right?
Yeah, it's I think about $570, $575. Wow. Our goal with the quick draw line was to really create connoisseur size cigars under $6. And, you know, as of July, you're going to see now three blends, six cigars. And then our goal by Q1 of next year is to have a third Vitola, which, you know, I'll share with you guys. We're going to have a small Perfecto in the Broadleaf Habano and this Connecticut. If everything works out in our favor, you know, we're a small company. But we want to have some nice premium cigars under $6. And even in the high-tax markets, we want to make sure that it's a cigar that when you have 30 or 40 minutes and really want to enjoy a quality cigar, this is something you're going to reach for.
Awesome. That sounds great.
I do love a good Perfecto. That's tends to be, I mean, beyond the Panatella, Perfecto tends to be one of my go-to Vitolas, so I'm excited to hear about that. And we're definitely excited to talk to you at the show. I think that'll be beyond the fact that you've got some extra goodies at the show, I mean, we're excited to talk to you about what's old, what's new, and what's happening at the show. That'll be a good interview, I think.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, guys. We appreciate it. We appreciate everything you guys are doing and everybody on the Cigar Media Association, again, that's treated us so well. It's a big industry. There's a lot of big players. There's a lot of big personalities. And, you know, we feel like we've got our share of the love, whether we deserve it or not. So we certainly appreciate it. And it's a nice symbiotic relationship when we get to try to add some value for you guys, too. And you know, the enjoyment is just part of it, right? But just the support you guys have offered us has been great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely, man. We appreciate it. It's nice to hear that. And, you know, obviously we do this. This is what do they call it? It's a work of love.
Work of love.
And labor of love.
Labor of love. There you go. That was the term I was looking for. Thank you. But no, it's, yeah, definitely excited for IPCPR. I'm repeating myself now. So it's going to be good to see you guys. And, John, we got anything else before we want to wrap up?
Just a quick hit to our audience. We switched nights. Of course, we're on Tuesday tonight. Normally we're on Wednesday. We've got Pipe Dummies back again tomorrow night. So check that out. They're going to have Cornell and Deal Old Joe Krantz. I don't know what any of that means, but it'll be a great pipe show on Wednesday. Make sure to tune in. That'll be 007 talking about pipes, and that's always a good time. Of course, you guys are going to be back with Cigar Chat on Thursday with Sam Morales talking about the Drew Estate Diplomat Program, which has taken the Facebooks by storm. I see everyone posting everything there. We'll be back at our regular time on Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It sounds like the Jorge Esteli is probably the winner based on how the voting's going. I don't see any other cigar winning out that vote. So I think we're going to be doing some IPA pairing just to kind of take it in a different direction. And then you guys will be back with Cigar Chat the following Thursday with Villager Cigars. So we've got a lot of shows. We've only got 4 weeks coming up to the IPCPR, so we've got a lot of content to pack in before we take off for Vegas. So that'll be a lot of fun. And I hope everyone has enjoyed us for this hour and 15 minutes. I know I had a lot of fun. Thanks again, Robert, for being on the show. It was a lot of fun. We enjoyed ourselves. And as we say in sharing our pairings, drink better, but drink less.